Hi, everybody. I love the Beatles song Help. And of course, this is exactly why I love to do the Ask Beatie Show, and that is to help you improve the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships. And I'm Beatie Cofredos. I'm a sex therapist and a sex therapist. I'm author of the groundbreaking book on relationships, the book that I wish I had when I started off many, many years ago, my own dating and relationship life. I'm also the advice columnist for Vans Papers in the Hamptons. I write three or four Ask Beatie advice columns every single month, which you're actually able to read online if you go to Vans Papers. I'm a national speaker, national radio, of course, and television expert guest, and I've been hosting. I can't believe it. I've been hosting the Ask Beatie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network for over 8 years, and that translates. I was talking to a friend yesterday. You figure one show a week over a period of 8 years. That is a lot of shows. But I love hosting here on the Progressive Radio Network. I love the staff, and I certainly have enjoyed the many, many, many local and national and international guests that I have had the privilege to interview here on the Ask Beatie Show. So, what is the Ask Beatie Show really all about? In one word, it is really about empowerment. Because we talk about all of the things that we can do, not just dream about, not just think about, not just hope about, but the things that we can actually do to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. So, what do we talk about? Well, of course, we talk about mental health issues, sexuality, and relationships, and how and what to do again to maximize our physical and emotional well-being despite the stressors of life and despite the fact that we cannot change our history. So I have a mantra, and I hope that it will become your mantra as we go along on this path together. And the mantra is acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can the things that continue to get in the way of our lives and our relationships and our ability to really live a joyful life. That's right. We need to be willing to be honest and say, yes, there is a problem. I have a problem, an old problem. I had traumas in my history that I have not yet been able to sufficiently work through. Or I've been dealing with depression for many, many years or anxiety. So today is the day. Today's the day that you can make a real promise to yourself and that you will be willing and that you will be serious, even though it is oftentimes not fun at all to begin this kind of a path and to begin this kind of a process. To be willing to really acknowledge the things that are truly getting in the way of your happiness. But acknowledging, my friends, I mean, that's step number one, but that is really not going to do the trick. Then we have to ask ourselves, okay, what do we do? How do we go about dealing with our traumatic past, our history, the divorce, the early child sexual abuse, the assault, the various different kinds of disappointments that we may have experienced in our lives? And there is a process, my friends, that I have discovered and that I have developed over the years in working with my own patients. And basically people say, well, you can't change history, so is it not just a waste of time to go back and take a look at what happened or did not happen in our lives? And the answer is absolutely not. The fact is that it's true. We cannot change. We can't change anything that happened even a second ago. But there is a way to be able to emotionally process what did and what did not happen in your lives and your relationships. And this process, believe me, if I had found a way to fast forward the process, because you can ask anybody in my personal life, specifically my husband, Jim, I'm probably the most impatient person that you will ever, ever want to meet. Personally, professionally, of course, that's a whole different story. But as I say, there is a way to go through this process. And then when you go through this process, you finally, once and for all, are able to live in the moment. For the most part, not perfectly, because nothing in our lives is perfect. Instead of living life where you typically have one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And it's a really, really important process. And many, many therapists, they'll say, nah, you know, live in the past, this is the past, and let it go. And let's just talk about cognitive, and let's just talk about behavioral things that you can do. But again, I've been practicing as a psychotherapist and sex therapist now for over 35 years, and I have found this process to be very, very invaluable to thousands and thousands of men and women and children and people of all ages and stages in life and all religions and sexes and sexual orientations. And what I hope that I have convinced you over all the years, and of course, if you are a new listener to the Ask Beattie Show, welcome, welcome. I hope that I will then be able to convince you that we don't need to take this life journey on our own. It is just way, way, way too difficult. And when we have problems and we have issues, the very, very best thing that we can do is reach out, hopefully to family and friends, and if need be, to professionals. And in doing so, you are not only doing what is in your best interest, but you're making your life journey easier and less isolated and alienated and lonely. And I've been reading more and more and more articles that people are in a real loneliness kind of crisis. And I hear this from 20-year-olds, I hear this from 30 and 40 and 50-year-olds, despite the technology. And I think that a lot of people, we pretend we're on our devices and we think that we are connecting in some real way. And yet, despite all of the connecting and connections I'm hearing from people who actually spend a lot of time on their computers and a lot of time on the dating sites, are feeling more and more and more alienated and more lonely. So my recipe is that we still need face-to-face connections. We still need to be able to look and touch people. And that even though we're certainly not going to be going backwards when it comes to technology, I think that it's really, really important for people to get out of their pajamas and get out of their apartments and houses and meet their friends and meet new friends face to face. You know what I've found with my own practice? I have two practices. I have a private practice here in New York City on the Upper West Side, and I also have a private practice in East Hampton. And in New York City, even people who live very, very close by, they are reluctant to come in. And I don't think it has anything to do at this point with the virus or the pandemic. And, you know, I treat people around the country. And it's still very, very strange for me. I'm on Zoom and people are oftentimes lying in bed, holding maybe a glass of water, hopefully not any alcohol, and they're in their pajamas. And yes, there is a comfort level, of course, to all of this. But I think that we really are losing something very, very special and very meaningful when it comes to connection. if we are going to design our lives to be totally, totally on the screen. You know, I'm seeing a couple of young men that I'm treating right now. They're in their mid to late 20s, and they're in finance, and they work from home. And I was asking them, do you have team meetings? When is the last time you saw your coworkers or met in person with your supervisor or your boss? And it's not happening. It's not happening very, very often at all. And I think that we, as consumers, we can buy into this new world and this new way, or we can try and push a little. At least if we can't push our bosses, or we can't push, you know, colleagues, we can push ourselves to find better ways to connect with people on a face-to-face basis. Now, I'm really curious what you think about all of this. The call-in number here on the Progressive Radio Network is 888-874-4888. And I am curious, do you think that you're finding that you have more connection, less connection? Are you happy with the kind of connection that you're having if it is primarily on the screen? And it's a new world. It's really, really a new and changing world. And I find it so strange and very disconcerting. I'll be walking around the Upper West Side, and I'm looking at children who are in their strollers. And what do you think that so many of these little kids, some of the kids, they look to be maybe 2 or 3 years old, they have phones. They're looking at phones. They're playing games. It's like, really, as a parent, and it's been a long time since I was a parent to a child that age, but, you know, maybe to say to your child, let's look at the trees, let's look at the flowers, let's look at the people, let's look at the sun. But, you know, I've been finding more and more that younger and younger and younger children are playing games. They're on their phones. And obviously, you know, and you can hear my bias. It is not helping in terms of connection. And we're finding that there is a lot of research that is coming out and is substantiating exactly what I am saying. And every week, you know, when I look at statistics, I look at depression statistics, I look at anxiety statistics, and I hope every week, and I check them, with CDC and, you know, various other sites. You know, I keep hoping that the numbers are going to be coming down, but the numbers are not. The numbers are not coming down. And of course, we can explain a lot of the depression and a lot of the anxiety. There's economic and social pressures that, you know, have really, really been heightened. And of course, on unemployment, you know, people will say there are a lot of jobs. Well, there are a lot of very low paying jobs, and that is very, very disconcerting for people who are actually trying to support a family. And, you know, walking around the Upper West Side here in New York City, it's really depressing to see all of the businesses that have closed and all of the empty storefronts. And one of our favorite restaurants is closing at the end of the month. And I was talking to the owner. It was like, why? The food is great. It's always been busy. And he was saying that landlords are doubling the rent. And certainly that is what is happening in a lot of places, certainly in New York City. So the challenges continue in our lives, and yet we have to continue to, you know, to fight the fight and not give up, which is why it is so important when we are going through difficult times in our lives, and we all go through difficult times in our lives, that we do reach out, that we do try to deal with our problems in very constructive versus destructive and self-destructive and self-sabotaging kinds of ways. And there are many things that we can again do, not just think about, to improve our days every single day in terms of the way we eat. And I know that Gary Nell talks about this all the time, the importance of plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables, and making sure that we're getting enough sleep and we're socializing. And again, the interaction. I mean, this is the common theme in all of the literature when we're talking about social isolation and we're talking about living a happy life. It always seems to come down to the one real important priority item, and that is connection, that is social connection. And other things that I know that I remind you about this every single week, but the importance of exercise and weight training. And a lot of people say, well, it's just too cold. It's just too cold outside to go for a walk. Well, there have got to be a lot of other ways that we can go about and that we can find to make sure that we are exercising. And weight training. I have weights in our bedroom, and I'll tell you, you can really get a pretty terrific workout and keep yourself feeling toned and trim if you commit to weight training. And of course, there's yoga and meditation. And the other thing that is so important, again, is talked about in the literature over and over and over again, is the importance of having supportive people in our life. And if you look at, and I'm asking you this question, if you look at all the people in your life, your family and your friends and your coworkers, how would you rate the supportive people that you have in your life? If you're having a bad day, do you have at least one person? We don't need many dozens of people, but at least having one person who you know that you can actually really count on if you're having a bad day. And also, if you're having a really good day, to be able to call that person and share the good news. Another reminder, and I know that I talk about this all the time, is the importance of eliminating toxins, of course, chemical toxins. But I talk about toxins primarily when I talk about toxic people. And toxic people, poisonous people, that oftentimes can include friends and family. And as I'm saying to a patient just yesterday, to remember that a little bit of poison is still poison. And I have this zero, zero toxicity policy in my life that goes for foods, that goes for chemicals, and that goes for people, which does not at all mean that if you're having problems in any of your relationships, that you're just going to walk away. But I'm sure that you really know what I mean when I talk about toxic people, people who make us crazy, people who take away our joy. And there's a reminder that I want you to think about, and not just think about, but really put into action. And that is a reminder to say no to the things, the people, and places that steal our joy. And I know that at the end of every year, I used to ask people to take a look at all of the people in their lives and ask themselves, who stays, who goes, who do you think that you can maybe negotiate a better kind of a relationship? And I think that what is in our best interest is that we don't do it just once a year, but that we take a look on a very, very regular basis and assess the kinds of people and the kinds of relationships that we have in our life. And if things are not going well, despite your efforts, your own efforts to try and improve the relationship, but if you have a friend or you have a colleague or you have a lover or you have a partner or you have a spouse who is not interested, who is not interested in acknowledging, addressing, and resolving the issues that are getting in the way of your relationship, you have to ask yourself the question. It's like, what are you doing? I mean, we can blame other people. He doesn't do this, she doesn't do that. But in fact, there's a question. There's a question that I think that we all have to actually ask ourselves. And this is the question. In fact, I wrote this article a couple of weeks ago for Dan's paper in my advice column. And the article, I want to share this with you because I think it's something that's very, very important. If we're going to live a happy life, we want to have happy and joyful and healthy relationships. Here is a very important fundamental question. And I want you to be honest with yourself. And here's the question. Are you enabling people to hurt you? Because I hear this all the time. She said this and he did that. And this is what this person did to me. And, you know, I hear again from patients who are beginning their therapy with me, things like, my children disrespect me. He cheats on me. She drinks too much. She refuses to have sex. He abuses me. Many of us voice and hear these complaints often, and many, many people hear them a lot, way too much. And they and numerous others like them aren't all that unusual, because I hear from patients regularly, you know, and it's disappointing and frustrating and even frightening to be in a dysfunctional and unhappy relationship. But an all important underlying question that has to be asked and answered honestly is this: why am I? Not why is he, or not why is she, but why am I allowing this to happen to me? Why am I allowing my partner, my children, my colleagues, my friends, or business associates to disrespect and hurt me? Now, I'm just wondering, you're listening to the show right now. You are hopefully thinking about all the people that you have in your life. And hopefully you are a lucky person and that you have great people in your life who are supportive and loving and caring and compassionate and are willing to work out issues when issues arrive. But if you're not, I'm going to read this again. Why am I allowing my partner, my children, my colleagues, my friends, or business associates to disrespect and hurt me? And more importantly, because we can't change our history, but today is a new day. So more importantly, what, if anything, am I prepared to do about it? Yesterday, I had a session with a woman who I've actually been treating for depression for the last few years. And she has a terrific, terrific circle of friends. She has great relationships with her colleagues at work. And she has incredibly dysfunctional and painful relationships with her siblings. We were talking about this. Her sister, she and her sister had gone on a little car trip, and the sister was rude and disrespectful, and my patient, let's call her Anne, of course that's not her real name, she started to cry. And I asked her, I said, but why didn't you say anything? He says, well, you know, I've been used to being the youngest one in the family, and I've been used to everybody not treating me well. And yet it's so interesting that in her other life, that could never happen. She knows how to set boundaries. She knows how to tell people that, you know, that they're not behaving properly. And yet with her own family. So we started to talk about this a lot more in detail. And this is a woman who was physically very, very, very badly physically abused by both her mother and her father when she was growing up. She was also sexually abused by a very close friend of the family. And with the physical abuse that happened with her parents, her older siblings, they just turned away. And not only did they turn away when she was a little girl, they basically have told her that it is all in her head and that she had the most loving, wonderful, terrific parents that she could have ever imagined. So talk about being invalidated, talk about feeling crazy, and it was really crazy making because her parents, for whatever reason, I mean, they were clearly having their own problems, but she was the target in her family, and her older siblings, they would be out and about and did absolutely nothing to try to protect her. And not only did they not protect her, but they have completely invalidated everything that she has had to say. So what has she learned? What has she learned about her feelings? What has she learned about her own experiences? Well, she's learned to question them and that she really doesn't trust herself. So this pattern of behavior, which never happens when she is with anyone other than her family, continues with her family and she continues to feel hurt and she continues to cry and she continues to feel badly and she continues to be angry. And yet, up to this point, she is very, very reluctant to confront any of them. And as I said to her, let's not use the word confront, because confront for a lot of people has a negative connotation that it's going to be tough, that it's going to be difficult, that it's going to be unpleasant. I posed this to her. I said, what if you looked at confrontation in another way? And that other way was, I need to have a conversation, not a confrontation, but I need to have a confrontation with my siblings and let them know that the way they oftentimes talk to me is not okay, that I feel hurt, that I feel angry, that I feel upset. And I asked her, I said, look, this has been going on for most of your life. And what if they continue to invalidate you? What, if anything, are you going to do? And she says, I cannot. She said, I absolutely cannot take the chance or take the risk of upsetting them in any way, because I don't think that I would be able to live my life without them. So here you have somebody who's been in this cycle for a very, very, very long time. She knows how to set the boundaries with everybody in her life, and yet the fear of abandonment, the fear of losing her siblings, although one has to wonder, what she would really be losing. However, she reminded me it's not always bad. They can go for weeks and sometimes months when everything is going well, and then something will happen. And when that something happens, instead of being able to say, I don't like the way you spoke with me, or I feel badly, or I feel upset, or I feel disappointed when you talk to me like this, or when you do this, she is unable to do this. So at this point, I mean, and she's very aware of this, she has opted for a relationship with her siblings, whether it's going to be good, bad, or ugly, and that she is not going to risk losing them. So, people do make choices all the time. And as I pointed out to her, I said, you realize that there is absolutely no reason at all for them to treat you differently or for them to behave differently. They may not even be aware of how their behavior is really hurtful to you. And she said at the end of the conversation, she was saying, sure, because I let them do it to me. So I am asking you, do you have people in your life who you are enabling, who you are allowing, who you are basically giving permission in your life to hurt you? And if you are, of course, the real question is, are you willing and do you want to do anything about it? Because there is a reality here. Look, no relationship is perfect. There are always going to be large and small issues. that need to be acknowledged, addressed, and resolved. And few of us, I don't know anybody who likes confrontation, but again, try to think of confrontation in terms of a conversation. And maybe we should just get rid of that word for now and think about if something is off, it's not about confronting, but it's about trying to have a conversation. And if you find yourself that you are surrounded by people who you aren't able to have conversations with, to acknowledge and deal with real life issues that are bothering you, you have to ask yourself, you know, what is it about you that is allowing this kind of thing to go on? And you can say, yes, I'm used to it, and this is the way I was raised. But with that sort of a mindset, the probability of things changing is not really great. But if we're not able, and if we are not willing to let people in our lives know that they have overstepped their boundaries and that we won't tolerate their disrespectful or abusive behavior, but that's the whole point. Will we tolerate it or will we not tolerate disrespectful or abusive behavior? So if we're not going to do anything about it, you know, as I've said, we cannot expect them to change. So that the ball, ultimately, it is in our court. And think about this. Why would anybody change when there are no consequences? And, you know, to be a little generous, they may not even be aware of what they're doing and how they're hurting and abusing us and disappointing us. And unless we are willing, unless we're somehow able to muster up the courage and set some boundaries. So again, the big question is, we don't like to. I think that it's sometimes really easier to blame the other person, the children, and he cheats on me, and she's not doing this, or she's not doing that. But again, the central question really is this, and that is, what role are we playing that helps to keep the dysfunction going in our relationships? Because in every relationship, think about it, people dance the dance. At times we're in step with each other. And at times it's really the missteps that seem to define our relationship. So what to do when we discover that the dance is no longer fun and that it has become unbearable or even dangerous? You know it, right? We all know when something is really off. But we do have choices, although it may seem initially that we don't. So what are our choices? We can do nothing, okay? And this can go on and on and on for a lifetime. Or we can complain, and we can complain forevermore. We can withdraw. We can be passive aggressive and just, you know, withdraw from conversations and from the relationships. We can threaten to leave. We can accept the role of a doormat. So how many of you right now who are listening to the show, I mean, hopefully all your relationships are wonderful, but if they're not, what role are you playing right now in keeping the dysfunction and keeping the unhappiness, keeping your unhappiness going? And we can hope and we can dream that things are going to get better on their own. Or, and this is the tough one, this is really, really the tough one, we can make a decision that we no longer will enable or accept the status quo and begin to make preparations to exit the toxicity. And again, I'm all about emotional communication and problem solving. I am all about playing out every single point of the game and of the match. And as you all know, I've been a competitive tennis player all of my life. So for me, it is playing out every single point and not walking off the court in the middle of the match. But if you're finding that you don't have an opponent, you don't have anybody to play with, you don't have anybody to talk with, then what are you going to do? So people will ask me, you know, why do you think that I am enabling people to hurt me? Well, an enabler is someone who, for a variety of reasons, usually beginning in the beginning, feels powerless and has learned early on to accept destructive and self-destructive behavior. And some of these explanations can include fear of abandonment and financial ruin, fear of being alone, poor self-esteem, for sure, a family history where these types of behaviors, and listen to this carefully, where these types of behaviors were normalized and accepted. And like my patient, you know, her family, they invalidated even that the parents, her siblings invalidated what she was saying about her parents beating her up almost every single day of her childhood. And when the neighbor friend, the good friend of the family, was sexually abusing her, she had learned before that people were not going to believe her and that people were not going to take her seriously. And as a result, we were talking about this yesterday, she never disclosed the sexual abuse until much, much, much later on. So again, poor self-esteem, a family history where these types of behaviors were normalized and accepted. And there could be a conscious or also even an unconscious false belief that somehow he or she is to blame and is deserving of the maltreatment. Now, especially if you're being gaslighted and the parents beginning would say, well, this is your fault. I wouldn't hit you. I would not hit you. I would not allow you to go to the dance if you were not a bad girl or if you were not a bad boy. So things get very, very, very confusing. And if this kind of a dynamic goes on when somebody is older, they are continually in a state where they are second guessing themselves. And that is one of the greatest hazards of being in this kind of a relationship where you are invalidated and where you are gaslighted. And you know what gaslighting is? When something is happening, you know it's happening. You're experiencing it's happening. You see it's happening. And when someone is saying, you're crazy, that's not happening at all. And over a period of time, especially over a period of years, you really do start to feel crazy and you really do start to not trust yourself. Now, although some or all of these fears and beliefs, okay, about the abandonment, the financial ruin, the fear of being alone. Although some of these fears and beliefs may be real, the enabler in us plays a very, very important role in keeping the dysfunctional dynamic going. Because it does. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to be able to say enough is enough and be willing to walk away from a toxic situation. And many, many, many people, both men and women, remain in untenable situations because of their own fears and their unresolved problems. And the reality is, though, that sooner or later, these toxic relationships, again, as you're thinking about the different relationships that you have going, hopefully toxicity is not something that defines your relationships, but sooner or later, these relationships have the potential to destroy us emotionally, psychologically, and also physically. Now, very, very recently, and I want to share this letter with you. I received this letter from a woman from West Hampton, and she wrote to me in my Ask Beauty column in Dan's papers. And this is what she wrote. Dear Beauty, I am a 27-year-old professional woman who has been in a relationship with John for the past 2 years. He has cheated on me, and at times our relationship has become violent. Well, John sounds like a real catch, right? Wrong. He's had legal problems because of his drug issues, but still refuses to get help. You probably think I'm crazy. No, I don't think she's crazy. I'm wondering, what is she doing, though? But I really love him. And of course, again, my commentary says absolutely nothing to do with love, but okay. We have broken up many times, but always end up getting back together. I recently found out that I am pregnant and really don't know what to do, and I need some advice. Well, this is my advice, and this is what I wrote to Amanda. I said, Dear Amanda, I'm truly sorry for your situation. I would ask this question of you first. This is the kind of question, of course, that I ask my patients and that I am asking you. Why have you stayed in such an abusive and dysfunctional relationship with someone who has hurt you over and over again? And that is the primary question. It's not John. It's not his drinking. It's not the abuse. The primary question is, why have you stayed in such an abusive and dysfunctional relationship with someone who has hurt you over and over and over again? I go on and I say in the letter, although John clearly has his own problems, it's important for you to first figure out why you have agreed, and she has agreed, and enabled. She has agreed, she has enabled, she has basically said this is okay. Why she has done this in terms of remaining in this destructive, self-destructive, and self-sabotaging relationship, and why she has gone on like this for 2 years. And that is really the most important question. John didn't write me. He's not asking me what he should do about his cheating or what he should do about his drug problems. He's not the one. He's not the one that has reached out. Amanda is the one that has reached out. So these are some of the questions that I posed to Amanda. Did you happen to come from an abusive family where you may have learned that abuse was a normal part of a relationship? And I want to tell you a quick story. Some of you may have heard this story before. A number of years ago, I was treating a young woman who was a nurse, great woman, seriously, seriously depressed. It turned out she had a bipolar disorder, but she was a great, great woman. She came from one of the most abusive families that I had ever, ever, ever known about. She was physically and sexually abused by her parents and her brothers and sisters for most of her childhood. So you can imagine the kind of mental, physical, sexual condition that she was in. She got to a point in her therapy with me where she was, you know, feeling a lot better, her work was going well, the depression was under control, her meds were fine, everything was going well. And she met a really, really nice man, and they started to date. She'd come in and she would tell me about this relationship, and I was so happy for her because she had never had a good relationship with anyone. Her parents were just disasters. Her siblings, I mean, they had been all so abusive to her. throughout her childhood. So about 3 months. 3 months into this relationship, she arrives and she says, "Beatty, I've called off the relationship." And I think his name maybe was Bob. I said, "You're kidding. Why? What happened? It was going great." In fact, she had even brought him into one of the sessions, and he seemed to be just a lovely, lovely person who was caring and sensitive. And I will never forget what this woman said to me. She said, "You know," she said, "this is the dilemma I'm in." She says, "How can something so good feel so wrong? And how can something so bad, I mean, all the abuse and all the dysfunction that she had lived with, when she was growing up as a child and also in subsequent relationships, how can that feel okay and normal?" So she broke this relationship off because it was a healthy, good, functional relationship, but it did not feel right. It felt weird. It felt wrong. So clearly, she and I had a lot more work to do because for her, violence and abuse was something that she had learned so early on to be, in quotes, normal. And I guess I'm asking Amanda the same kind of question. When I asked her, "Did you happen to come from an abusive family where you may have learned that abuse was a normal, in quotes, part of a relationship?" I also asked Amanda, "Where did you learn that your needs for love and security are not important?" Of course, if she did happen to come from an abusive family type of situation, of course, she would have learned that her needs for love and security were not important because they would not have happened if she was growing up in an abusive family. I then go on to say, "You say that you love him. However, it sounds like there is little, if any, loving in your relationship." And this is something that we all have to be willing to acknowledge. Love is not abuse. It is not physical abuse. It is not emotional abuse. It is not sexual abuse. It is not verbal abuse. It is compassion and respect and love and consideration. Those are the kinds of things that define a truly loving relationship. So please, please think about your relationships, past and present, and remind yourself that love is not abuse. Now, in the best of relationships, we are going to have issues. We are going to have ups and downs. But in a truly, truly loving relationship, we are going to be with people who are going to be willing, who have the skill. And if they don't have the skill, to get the skills to be willing to acknowledge and address and resolve whatever the issues are that are getting in the way of the relationship. It takes two to tango. We can't dance this dance on our own and expect that our relationships are going to work. So, as a reminder to all of you, and of course to Amanda, love is about respect and commitment and consideration and sharing and caring and patience and empathy and trust and underscore a willingness to work out problems because there is no such thing as the perfect relationship where there are no issues and no problems. So I go on in my response to her, saying that since you're about to become parents, can you imagine bringing child, a newborn baby, into this kind of abusive relationship? I mean, not just definitely something very, very frightening to think about. So, since you're about to become parents, it would be a good time to get some much needed professional help, both individually and as a couple. Now, if he refuses to go, and I suspect from what little Amanda has told me about John, I would not at all be surprised if he refused to go. But she needs to go. Because the real question, of course, is do you really want to bring an innocent child into the toxicity that you, Amanda, are describing? And I end the letter, as I end all the letters to my readers, you know, and to you as well, by the way. As I mentioned, I have a private practice here in New York City on the Upper West Side and also in East Hampton. So I want you to know that if there is something that I can do, if I can help you, if I can help you in any way and with Amanda, if I can help you learn about what real love is and how to learn to take better care of Amanda. And I end the letter to her, you know, if not now, then when? Because those are some of the central things that A, Amanda has absolutely no idea what love is, and Amanda has not learned to take good care of Amanda. You know, other things, I mean, obviously, Amanda is second-guessing her. She is not able to, and has not been able, to set any boundaries for John. And, you know, when she talks about, you know, loving him, you know, again, she has really no idea what real healthy love and what a real healthy relationship is really all about. So somewhere along the line, Amanda didn't learn. She didn't have the experience. She either didn't have the experience, you know, when she was a child growing up, or she never had the experience to talk to people or have friends or have family who happened to be in healthy relationships and who were willing to talk to her. She obviously did not read my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, which describes exactly how we should all be able to assess. Yes, it's not a sexy word, but really how to assess who is right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. You know, when I think about my assessment format in my book, I mean, there is absolutely nothing that Amanda has described about John that would rate a plus in any areas, not in communication, not in problem solving. He has a substance abuse problem. He's abusive in all kinds of different ways. You know, so clearly, Amanda has no idea what the ingredients actually are that go into a long-term healthy relationships. And Amanda is absolutely not alone. And for many of you who've been listening to the show, and you have heard me talk about my book, you've heard me talk about the formula, I've identified the three things, only three things. Of course, they're really big three things that we all have to do to never make a mistake in love again and to be able to find a healthy and happy relationship. And I want to go through this again because in looking at this situation with Amanda and John, there is absolutely nothing here that would create the possibility of Amanda having a healthy relationship with John or probably with anyone. Because the first thing that has to happen, if we're ever going to have a healthy and happy and wonderful relationship with anyone, is that we have to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And we have to have been willing and able to work through our own issues of depression or anxiety or trauma or early child sexual abuse or whatever things are and were that continue to get in the way of our life and relationship. And as I tell people all the time, the relationships, our relationships need to be the icing on the cake. And we need to be the cake. So in this situation, Manda clearly has a lot of her own issues that she needs to take care of with or without John if she is ever going to be able to have a healthy relationship with anyone. And again, number two, it is clear from Amanda's letter that she doesn't know. She does not know the ingredients that need to be present if you're going to have a healthy relationship. And number three, also, she's not alone in this either. Moving forward, if she decides that she is going to exit this relationship, she is going to have to learn. In fact, we all need to learn how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And what my research found, and this was also something that I was very upset about because I'm such an impatient person in my personal life, is that the research found that it takes about a year to really find out who somebody is and isn't, and that we cannot fast forward the process. And obviously, if we're seeing a lot of red flags, we are not going to stay in a relationship, for a year. We are going to exit as soon as possible when we start to see the dysfunction and the toxicity. Well, everyone, it is 3:56. I never know why and how the time goes by so quickly, but it does. And I want to thank you all, as usual, for listening, for tuning in, for going to the Progressive Radio Network archives. And every week, I hope that there is really some little thing that I have said, some small little thing that can make your day better, that you can have aha moments that will really improve the quality of your life and your relationships. I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. The first one, of course, is that you need to do, and that we all need to do, whatever it is we need to do to live our lives in ways that are in our best interest. And that means really learning to love ourselves. And secondarily, we all need to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to love each other. So goodbye, everybody. Have a really wonderful, wonderful rest of the day, a great week, and I will talk with you next Monday and every Monday live at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in very, very beautiful New York City. So again, have a great rest of the day. Be good to yourself, be good to others, and we'll talk next week. Goodbye, everybody.